Good morning, everyone. It's so good to be here and see you all again. It's been a while. That joke, I don't blame you, Mika. Like, I'm sorry that Jason made you say that joke. And you do know that Jason calls himself J-Lo, right? In his email. I mean, I'm sure you know this, but it just shows you who Jason is, which is preacher jokes. Oh, Dr. Jason. Jason has been really sharing a lot about what the college church is doing and how God is working among you guys, and it's really encouraging, and it's amazing. So I don't know why he invited me here to preach, and I told him, I said, I'm going to dismantle all the good work you're doing right now by saying crazy things. So it'd be a great prank if you went up to him next week and said, Tim did a terrible job, I'm going to stop coming, and because I think it'd be great for our friendship. I'm just kidding. It's really encouraging hearing all the amazing ways God is working through the College Church of Christ and through you and in Fresno. It's really powerful hearing about the ways you're living out hospitality. A lot of times, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm not saying this in reference to College Church, but I was thinking the other day, have you ever visited a church and you step into this church almost feeling like fresh meat in a jungle of lions? Like, what I mean by that is sometimes I'll visit a church and I'll walk into a church feeling like fresh meat in a jungle of friendly lions. And like right when I walk into the church, I get surrounded, swarmed by a bunch of these lions, not trying to eat me, but trying to like recruit me. And they're all coming into my personal space and just like ask me all these questions and really trying to be friendly, which I really, really appreciate. Because you don't want to be a standoff church, right? You don't want to be rude. You want to be inviting. But what will happen is they'll like swarm my space and ask really personal questions. Like, and sometimes I'm like, do you want my social security number too? And like where I live and, you know, but I get it. The idea is to be as friendly and as inviting as possible so that the person comes back to your church and visit. The idea, I think, underneath that, even more, the virtue that's even more profound is the idea of hospitality. We want to be a hospitable church so that people come back and worship with us, so that people come back and they feel like they are part of family. That's good. That's a good virtue by which to live. But I think the problem is that a lot of times I think churches have reduced hospitality to church guest services. Like, we've reduced hospitality to just what happens out there in the foyer or what happens in the auditorium. And that's when it becomes problematic, because hospitality is a much more meaningful virtue. It can happen in our church buildings within these walls, but it really takes place outside of these walls. So I want to turn to John. Let's turn to John chapter 2 for a portrait of Jesus' hospitality. We're going to start in verse 1. John 2, verse 1. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." Ah, what a predicament. You're at a party, you're at a wedding feast. There should be wine here. And they ran out. "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Woman is not, he's not saying this in a rude way, right? Which is why I often refer to my wife like that. "Hey, woman," I'm totally just joking. Do you see what I mean? Terrible preacher jokes. Jesus replied, "My time has not yet come." It's my time to do these signs. It's my time to show them what I can do. It's not my time yet, but Jesus concedes. His mother said to him, said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing each holiday, from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. This was water that was used to either purify your hands, cleanse your hands, or cleanse your body as a way to, it's purification rites or rituals to get rid of the uncleanliness, to clean the body, to clean the hands. Verse 8, he told them, "Now draw out some of that water and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." This is fascinating. This is the best tasting wine. This is the expensive wine. This is the good wine. Right. And so the master of the banquet notices this. He sees it. He acknowledges it. Verse 11, this is the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed God's glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. The Gospel of John reveals this cosmic drama of what God is doing through Jesus. Jesus is the Word. Jesus is the incarnation of God that gives life into people. All throughout John, you see these statements, I am, Jesus referring to himself as I am. I am an agent of God's salvation who gives abundant life. I am the bread of life. I am the resurrection and life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus is sending this message, or John is sending this message, that Jesus is an agent of salvation, an agent of life. I speak life into people. And so he accompanies some of this stuff, narrative characteristic with signs. This is the first sign that Jesus uses to point to God's glory, to point to who he is, and this sign of turning water into wine. There's a lot of symbolism that's going on in here. The act of turning water into wine symbolized the presence of the Messianic age. What that means is this best wine alluded to the belief that in this new era, there's something new coming. There's something powerful coming. This new era, the yield of vineyards would be enormous and splendid. And this meant that this messianic age, this age where Jesus will reign, will be a spectacular age of cleansing, of newness, of restoration, and of abundant life. There was so much symbolism going on here in the act of turning water, ceremonial water, into wine, the best wine. And all of that pointed to the power and glory of God. But I want to get a little bit more contextual than that. This act of turning wine, water into wine, not just any wine, but the best wine, was a sign of hospitality. Now, I want you to remember this. Jesus' first sign in the Gospel of John was a sign of hospitality. His guests noticed that he brought out the best wine. And so you see Jesus giving his very best to the people of this world. You see God giving his very best to the people of this world. One, through the form of the incarnation, coming down as flesh in the form of Jesus. Second, in this context, he gave his very best in the form of food. Food reaches people. Food conveys deep messages. Food conveys deep messages about who we are, about where you stand in our relationship, about how I see you as a person, right? When I give you the worst of my food, I am saying something about our relationship. If you are coming over to my house and I give you frozen, like, pizza from Walmart, great value pizza, I'm saying two things. One, I'm either so lazy to cook, like, too lazy to cook and I'm broke, or two, I just really don't care about a relationship that much. Jesus gives his very best to show the people in this party, in this wedding feast, that they are not strangers in the kingdom, but that they are part of something bigger. They are a part of his community. Food. Food is such a powerful symbol of hospitality. For many Asian cultural heritages, food is a love language. You know how you have those five love languages? Well, it's not, they're not universal love languages. There's not food in there. It doesn't fully capture love languages of other cultures, such as the one I grew up in, Vietnamese cultural heritage. Food is a love language, a very strong, powerful love language, a very striking love language. We used to have, when my family ran from the Vietnam War, they migrated to Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So they moved around New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And so there would be this fusion. I grew up, man. I grew up thinking that all the foods I ate were Vietnamese food, like pig feet, blood sausages, chitlins. I thought all of this stuff was Vietnamese food. And then, literally a few years ago, I found out that it was Louisiana food. And I was like, that's Cajun food. I've got soul in me. But really, it was this fusion of Vietnamese and Cajun put together. So it's this genre, this category of food called Viet Cajun. And we moved to Fresno, and family from Louisiana would come visit us, and they would bring, I kid you not, over like 100 pounds of food. They would come with big boxes packed with the best of Vietnamese food and the best of Cajun food. They would come with blue crabs. They would come with chitlin. Like, they would come with, like intestine. For some of you, you might be thinking, yuck, Dan. But, you know, like, they would come with all this seafood seasoned in Cajun spices, but also Vietnamese spices. They would bring the best of both worlds. The best of Vietnamese food and the best of Cajun food, Louisiana food, fused into one. And that was their hospitality. This virtue of hospitality was so strong for my family, food, that they couldn't come visit without bringing boxes of food. And I didn't even realize that was a thing until I lived in Florida. I'm a fisherman, I'm a kayak fisherman. And one of the things I wanted to do, the ways I wanted to show my dad love and hospitality, was I came and visit him, and I packed a big 50-pound box with fish. I was like, I got to do whatever it takes to come and bring fish as a way to show hospitality. And then, of course, our family would provide the best space in the house, which was my room. As a kid, I had to sacrifice my room for my cousins as a way to welcome people. By bearing gifts of food, these cousins of mine would convey hospitality that's more meaningful than we could convey in a restricted, limited Sunday space or time slot. They conveyed harmony, deep connectedness, an intimacy that's not frayed by proximity. They conveyed love and peace. I remember as a adolescent visiting my friend's home. This memory is so vivid. This friend's name is Charlin. And I remember visiting his home, and they didn't have very much. And his mom couldn't speak English very well. They're Cambodian. They too were refugees. But his mom, I would be hanging out with Charlin out in the living room, and I remember his mom coming out with a big bowl of food, Cambodian food. And I had already eaten, so I said, no, thank you, that's okay. So she went back in the kitchen. She came out with another bowl of food, a smaller serving. And I said, no, that's okay, I'm full. And she brought the food back. She came out a third time. And I don't know if she thought Tian might be too American for our Asian food, but I kid you not, she came out with a bowl of nicely placed Twinkies. Several Twinkies in a bowl that was nicely placed. And I thought, first of all, who does that? Who puts Twinkies in a bowl? Second of all, I don't like Twinkies. I don't eat Twinkies. But I couldn't say no. And there were a bunch of Twinkies in that bowl. But Charlin's mom, this is the way She knew how to express her love through this food, hospitality. So, of course, I had to say yes, and I ate the food anyway. I ate the Twinkies anyway. You must be thinking, like, he's weird. He's talking about chitlins and pig feet and loving that stuff, and then he doesn't want to eat Twinkies. Yeah. But she was trying her best to love me the way she knew how. And in that bowl of nicely placed, intentionally placed Twinkies, she was showing love. She gave me her very best to show me that I was simply more than a friend, that I was family, that I belonged. I was a member of their family community. Hospitality isn't solely about friendliness within these walls, within any church walls, church. It's about giving our very best to the people around us so that they can feel they are part of God's community, God's family in the most authentic way. And there's a problem, you see, because we're very individualistic society. We love our home space. We like doing our own thing. And so Sunday makes church so nice and neat. It wraps everything up because we get to go and be friendly to people and then go back into our homes and be comfortable. But when we withhold authentic Christian hospitality, we deprive people of experiencing God in an intimately communal and relational way, how God is meant to be experienced, within a relational context, within a community context. And what we end up doing is we perpetuate an individualistic, impersonal, and relationally impotent false God. My God is not individualistic. My God is a very hospitable God, amen. He sent Jesus here for us. He gave his very best. He stepped out of his comfort zone. Philippians. So there's this problem I hear when I hear my young adults complain that they have deeper, more meaningful relationships with their coworkers or their classmates than they do with the church they grew up in. That's a problem. And it's not something I hear only at the church I currently serve at, but in other church contexts, like the church I served at in Florida. There's a problem, and my heart is so broken when I hear my young adults tell me that they grew up in a church, but has only been invited into a member's home like less than 5 times over the span of how many decades? 2 to 3 decades. That's problematic. It's heartbreaking. And from my experience, I found that a lot of young adults don't leave solely because of some kind of faith crisis. They largely leave our church context because they're seeking more hospitable communities than the very church in which they grew up. So we have to take responsibility for that. I meet with college students who would tell me, Tian, I just don't have relationships in the church. No one invites me into their homes. There's a problem when we neglect to live out hospitality. And we have to acknowledge that. Jason told me that your series that you've been going through is on peacemaking. Hospitality is such an integral ethic of peacemaking, church. Jesus ushered in a new era of peace. Peace between humanity and God and peace between humanity and ourselves by intimately dining with people. Notice that a lot of his conversations took place in homes. Around food, right? The Lord's Supper, eating with the tax collectors. And so he didn't just dine with anybody. He dined with the least of these, the least desirables. If we want to reach people, we need to eat with people. Amen? We need to eat with people. Hospitality. So hospitality also means that we go out of our way to give our very best to the least of these. Amen? It means we give our very best to the least of these. Something supernatural happens when we live out hospitality in the most authentic way. Something supernatural happens. Hospitality creates a space for us to vulnerably share stories. We get into each other's lives when we live out hospitality. We break callous hearts. We begin to see each other as humans beyond simplistic categories that we create. We begin to see each other as human beings made in the image of God. When we live out hospitality, we break stratified social boundaries that separate people. Amen. When we live out hospitality and share a meal together in each other's homes, I begin to see you than more than what the news or society tells me to see you as. I see you as a person. And you see me as a person. We can begin to have authentic, real conversations and develop real personal relationships. Something supernatural happens when we live out hospitality. There's this the spirit just kind of reminded me of this. But I don't remember his name exactly. You're going to have to Google this. You're going to have to trust me, but you're going to have to Google this to find out his name. There's this man, this African-American man, who believes that it is his mission to convert KKK people, or people who are in the KKK. And you know how he does that? He invites them over into his home. Okay, you realize what I'm saying, right? Yeah. This is a black man who invites people of the from the KKK into his home to eat with him. He has conversations with them. He shares with them his heart and shows them that he's more than just whatever they think he is, that he's a person. And he sees them as a person. And do you know how many people he's been able to convert or lead out of the KKK because of what he's done? It is so powerful what hospitality can do. Amen. This guy has led people out, a black man leading people out of this crazy, dangerous, hateful group into a place of peace and relational harmony. That is peacemaking, church. That is true peacemaking. That is true. And so it's so funny. If you look up images, you will see videos and interviews. This guy will have KKK memorabilia on his walls. But it means something else. It's not like, oh, yeah, I'm repping this. It's like, these are the people I've led out of the KKK. These belong to them. And I hear that story, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, the things that God can do when we open our hearts. And when we open our homes, and when we are willing to put ourselves in vulnerable situations, something supernatural happens. We begin to see people as people. Our hate begins to dissipate. Our anger begins to dissipate. And we foster a culture and a church and society based on true, authentic, meaningful relationships that is gospel-informed, that is peaceable, that is harmonious. And the best way to do that is in our homes with food. When I was converted at a church here in Fresno, I was 18. I was very angry. I'd grown up on the west side of Fresno, grew up in the hood, where, by the way, I learned a lot about hospitality, because when you're poor, you have to rely on one another. And so one of the best ways to learn about hospitality, by the way, is to become friends with someone who's poor. Because they will teach you how to do community right. Right? They will. My family was fractured. We were really broken. I didn't know what healthy community looked like. And people at this church, even though I don't agree with them theologically anymore, people at this church invited me into their homes. They invited me over for Christmas. They invited me over for Thanksgiving. They invited me over and gave me the best of what they had, because they knew that I was in a broken family relationship and I really had nowhere to go. And I experienced love in the most sincere form I was able to experience. The first time I ever had filet mignon was at this church at a member's home. They gave me their very best. And I just so distinctly remember it was Christmas. Christmas is normally reserved for family time. What am I doing in your family's home? This is not a time to spend with other people. It's a time to spend with family. But the fact that he invited me over to his house for Christmas showed me that I belonged. That was hospitality. It wasn't just a one-time thing. It was multiple times. But that he was grilling like he normally does. And his wife had asked him, what are you grilling? He said, filet mignon. And my eyes was like, what? That's the stuff I see on TV. Filet mignon? I don't even eat steak. I'm going to have filet mignon. And he sat that steak down, that filet down for dinner. And I cut into it. And I was like, this thing is like butter. It is so good. And my mind could have gone, man, like you must be getting paid really well that you're giving me filet mignon. It kind of went that way a little bit. I was like, what'd you do? How much you get paid? But that doesn't matter. The guy, this family gave me their very best. They gave me the filet mignon. It was the first time I'd experienced that. They gave the best of what they had to the least of these. And because of that, guys, I work with young adults, really hurt and discouraged about the state of the church, and we're not hospitable enough and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I had this experience. It's possible to have this. The church is a powerful tool. God uses the church as a way to show his hospitality. I've seen it. I've experienced it, and it is so beautiful. And I had other members invite me over for Thanksgiving. I mean, it's powerful. Right? It is possible. And when we live that out, supernatural changes take place in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our communities. Peacemaking can begin to happen. So this man gave us, and his family gave the very best wine. By giving me that filet mignon, they gave the very best wine. So I leave you with this question, friends, family, church. What would it look like if you gave your very best wine to the people in your neighborhood, to the people in your workplaces, to your family and friends? What would it look like if you gave your very best wine to your church? There would be people around standing up who would love to pray with you if you have any prayer requests while we stand and while we sing.